This is a pubcast in the style created by Hannah L. Harrison and Philip A. Loring. Pubcasts are quick, abridged read-throughs of scholarly articles. I'm Tim Alamainchuk, a postdoctoral fellow at Carleton University and a research fellow at the Dragon Lab at St. Jerome's University. This is quick and dirty, which means you won't hear any fancy music or edits, just the paper and some paraphrasing. You also won't hear any references, but they are all available in the publication itself. Today I'm going to read a paper that was published in the journal Ecology and Society titled What Makes a Convivial Community Tool? Investigating Grassroots Ecological Restoration. The paper was co-authored by myself and Stephen Murphy from the University of Waterloo. The full publication is available on Ecology and Society's website as an open access publication. A note before we begin. Everything I say in this podcast is covered by a CC0 license, which means I put it fully in the public domain. I believe that knowledge should be freely available to people, and public domain licensing is the best way to do this. That means you are free to remix, reuse, republish, or otherwise reconstitute this work without any permission or credit. It is nice to be credited for my ideas, but getting them out there is far more important. I do this work for the betterment of people and our environment. Let's start with the abstract. The practice of ecological restoration through native plant gardening is emerging among community groups as a means of addressing degradation in urban landscapes. Despite this trend, restoration remains primarily studied as a professional practice. Grassroots associations support people in growing native plants, but within the research on restoration ecology, there remains little study of how non-professionals engage in the practice. Here we adapt and expand Ivan Illich's concept of a convivial community tool, i.e. a tool that is open and accessible rather than restricted to certain users, to ecological restoration through a case study of the Ottawa Wildflower Seed Library. Participants highlighted two main strategies of the Seed Library: overcoming barriers and supporting emergent practices. The Seed Library helped people overcome the barriers of plant availability, cost, and knowledge, while supporting spontaneous initiatives from volunteers to further the mission of the Seed Library. We argue that these two strategies operationalize the idea of a convivial community tool. This research contributes an understanding of one way that ecological restoration can broaden its appeal by empowering non-professionals to engage in restoration, and provides a starting point for a novel organizational framework based on Illich's ideas. Introduction. Ecological restoration has the potential to help address global biodiversity collapse and create nature-based solutions to climate change, offering communities tangible actions to take in the face of global degradation. Much research has been conducted into the professional practices of ecological restoration. Principles and standards are debated, practitioners have been surveyed, researchers regularly probe the knowledge-practice divide. Although a great deal of ecological restoration is undertaken by communities, neighborhood groups, and citizens, there is little understanding of how non-professionals engage in the practice. Research that focuses primarily on community members tends to examine volunteers who are part of larger initiatives orchestrated by professional organizations. There is a need to understand the grassroots practice of ecological restoration to meet the ambitious goals of the UN Decade on Ecosystem Restoration. The idea of a convivial community tool describes tools, knowledges, and practices that are open and accessible as a counterweight to professionalization and the restriction of access through industrial capitalism. For instance, bike kitchens are communal bicycle repair workshops that allow anyone to access bicycle repair tools and knowledge. If native plant gardening is considered a tool, can it be made into a convivial community tool? And what would be required to do so? Although there are practical examples of community tools and principles on designing technology with that framework, there is a gap in operationalizing the concept. Illich provided the philosophical underpinnings of the idea rather than a prescriptive guide on how to create such a tool. Before it is possible to develop a blueprint, it is important to examine the phenomenon as it occurs naturally. Conviviality is not only a quality of the tool itself, but also something that must be practiced by spaces or organizations that govern access. This paper investigates the practices that a grassroots association uses to support ecological restoration as a convivial community tool. Such community-led efforts can contribute to the creation of a restorative culture and enable holistic restoration that underscores the connection between people and the ecosystems they inhabit. Typical urban properties are degraded. There is little native biodiversity, poor linkages between patches of quality habitat, and a lack of habitat features on the landscape. Small garden habitats can support a significant population and provide habitat. Conventional gardening practices usually involve planting with non-native species and prioritizing turf grass. Individual property owners make planting decisions that cumulatively degrade ecosystems further, creating a tyranny of small decisions. Shifting people toward pro-environmental behaviors like native plant gardening requires more than motivation. Barriers to the desired behavior must be lowered or eliminated. Barriers to the practice of native plant gardening include the availability of native plants, specialized knowledge, and community support. Creative approaches to restoration, including incorporating rituals and art, have been positioned as a complementary alternative to scientific technocratic restoration. In order for the practice to remain flexible and creative, it is important to study initiatives that exist outside of the professional structures of restoration and to maintain an open definition of the practice. Such an approach embodied in native plant gardening provides a pathway towards an ethic of caring for the land, but despite its virtues, the practice is not yet widespread. We believe that an understanding of how organizations can enable participation in ecological restoration will contribute to making it more widespread. We conducted a qualitative case study of the Ottawa Wildflower Seed Library, hereafter the OWSL, to understand if and how a grassroots ecological restoration organization empowers people to engage in the practice, and specifically if and how that organization operates as a convivial community tool. I will abridge the methods section here for the purpose of this recording. So we conducted qualitative semi-structured interviews with 24 participants ranging between 20 minutes and 3 hours. These were participants who volunteered with the Ottawa Wildflower Seed Library, and they had involvement ranging from casual contact to deep involvement. We also extensively interviewed the founder of the OWSL. We'll move on to the results. All participants were asked about accessibility and barriers to activities of the seed library, as well as barriers to native plant gardening that the seed library helped them overcome. Two categories of barriers emerged from the data: external systemic barriers to native plant gardening and internal program barriers. Systemic barriers identified by participants included the cost of native plants, the availability of those species of plants, and knowledge about how to grow and care for them. Participants identified 6 main barriers present to varying degrees in seed library activities. Those were time, seed and plant knowledge, transportation, garden space, physical ability, and internet access. Each of the 3 systemic barriers was addressed by the strategy of the seed library, as described by participants who engaged in the organization's practices. The seed library uses 2 distinct pathways to help people overcome barriers: top-down program design and emergent practices. In other words, spontaneous initiative taking by participants towards the mission of the seed library. As the leader and manager of the project, endeavors to keep activities accessible. For instance, she intentionally selects pickup locations in parts of Ottawa accessible by transit, and holds at least 5 pickup events in order to ensure people can access the location. Additionally, she mails seeds to those who may have difficulty coming to in-person events. The top-down program design of seed giveaways, plant exchanges, and maintaining the Facebook community helped participants overcome systemic barriers of cost, availability, and knowledge while creating an environment where emergent practices, such as offering rides, could develop. Seed giveaways were one of the core practices that all participants took part in. This addressed cost as a systemic barrier. The practice of a seed giveaway consisted of several steps: harvesting seed for donation, cleaning seed, packaging seed, and coordinating pickup events. Melanie led the coordination of pickup events with the support of participants in the seed library. 3 other practices, harvesting seed, cleaning seed, and packaging seed, were primarily done by participants with Melanie's support. The seed library holds seed giveaway events in the fall so that participants can sow the seeds in the winter and provide the necessary conditions for stratification and germination. The seed library also operates a plant exchange year-round, coordinating through their Facebook group, and they host in-person plant exchange events in the spring. The seed library hosts in-person plant exchanges, and Melanie also maintains a spreadsheet where participants can sign up to share plants on an ad hoc basis as a means of providing plants for people who do not yet feel comfortable growing them from seed. Some interview participants expressed feelings of intimidation about growing plants from seed. Plant exchanges and seed giveaways both address the systemic barrier of availability by making multiple native plant species available for people. Availability was identified not only as a barrier to getting started, but also to advancing one's own native plant gardening efforts. A quote from a participant here: "I was looking for shade plants in particular, and it's very hard to find native plants in Ottawa. There's really no nursery in town that specializes in native plants. Much, much harder here to actually pick up the plants." Participants credited the seed library with helping them overcome the initial hesitation and also being able to provide a variety of desirable plants. The systemic barrier of knowledge was addressed through the use of the Facebook group, where participants both asked and answered questions. Participants said they could rely on the Facebook group for niche knowledge that may not be easily accessible through internet searches. Melanie said she made a regular practice of sharing native plant resources several times per day in the group, including webinars, scientific papers, and articles. Most participants in the seed library said it was their first time gardening with native plants, and that their connection with the seed library facilitated their adoption of the practice. Although many reported feeling intimidated at the beginning, they said the practice of native plant gardening was easy once they acquired the requisite knowledge. "I had so many aha moments," said one participant, "and I'm still on my learning curve, but man, have I ever learned a lot in the last less than a year. And I just want to share that because this is important and it's easy. It's super easy." Participants characterized the Facebook group as both a source of knowledge and an opportunity to share things they have learned in an effort to advance the work of the seed library and spread the practice of native plant gardening. Participants relied on information provided by Melanie through the seed library Facebook page to select plants, manage their yards, and perform essential tasks like seed collection and cleaning. Knowledge transfer happened in 3 ways: peer-to-peer, top-down through Melanie's posts, and by seeking external research. External research and resources were very important to the generation of knowledge. Melanie told interviewers she posted only scientific sources and quoted rather than paraphrased. Her stated intention was to direct people to these resources. Peer-to-peer knowledge transfer was common, with volunteers answering questions for others at seed pickup events, event organizers providing technical information, and participants answering questions on Facebook. Melanie said the seed library's strategy was to share native wildflower seeds and to advocate for large-scale system change, such as reforming bylaws and encouraging native plant gardening in public areas. In this way, they are both temporarily bridging barriers for participants and dismantling those barriers within the broader culture. Several participants highlighted yard bylaws, which specify a maximum height that limits the native plants that can be planted, as a barrier to greater participation. Melanie described a vision for the future that would constitute a restorative culture. Melanie said, "People come to each other's houses, talk about their gardens, and then we build people that feel like they've met like-minded people and are hopeful for the future. And then that native gardens become the standard and lawns become obsolete because we're so used to seeing those gardens in the city." In order to achieve this vision, Melanie and other participants planned and executed several in-person events, including an event to clean and pack seeds and plant exchanges. Many participants described the work of the seed library as shared by all rather than the work of Melanie alone. Although participants described themselves as involved to varying degrees, they did not see a hierarchy among volunteers in the seed library, though all recognized Melanie as the leader. All work from folding seed envelopes to hosting seed pickups was recognized primarily by Melanie through a post in the Facebook group. Melanie described how she would split tasks into smaller pieces to make them more accessible for people. For instance, a given packet of seed could be folded by one volunteer, packed by another volunteer, with seed donated by a third volunteer, and given away by another, allowing four people to be involved in the process. Many participants reported a strong desire to give back to the work of the seed library after receiving free seeds or plants. We'll move on to the discussion now. This study focused on the operation of the OWSL as a convivial community tool. We conducted a qualitative case study of the seed library to understand if and how a grassroots restoration organization empowers people to engage in the practice, and specifically if and how that organization operates as a convivial community tool. We found that the seed library is a grassroots ecological restoration association that empowers people to engage in restoration by lowering the barriers to participation, and that these barriers are lowered through both top-down program design, horizontal support between participants, and emergent practices, otherwise known as conviviality. Members of the seed library assist one another in their efforts to access native plant gardening, which is a core feature of the organization rather than a side effect. This lateral support between participants and the commitment to enabling people to access seeds make the OWSL a convivial community tool. Participants credited their native plant work largely to the existence and support of the seed library. Many participants began native plant gardening because of the seed library. Specifically, they said the seed library helped them overcome the barriers of availability, cost, and knowledge. Prior research into volunteer activity in ecological restoration has focused on motivation to participate. However, motivation is a necessary but not sufficient condition for pro-environmental behavior change. Community-based social marketing is a behavior change approach that postulates lowering barriers is the key to enabling pro-environmental behavior. The seed library operates by lowering systemic barriers to native plant gardening for people who are motivated to take on the practice. Participants identified knowledge barriers around the collection and treatment of native plant seeds. Most plants native to Ontario need to experience cold stratification prior to germination, a step that was intimidating to some participants. One participant reported trying to grow native plants prior to their involvement with the seed library without following the proper stratification protocol and becoming discouraged. This suggests that the seed library provides support that enables people to garden with native plants when they would have otherwise been unable to. This can be characterized as the seed library's impact, which refers to the changes that a grassroots association brings about, whether internally or externally. Smith, 2000, differentiated the study of impact from effectiveness, which he defined as how a grassroots association accomplishes its impact. The seed library achieves its impact by addressing the barriers of availability, cost, and knowledge using both top-down program delivery and emergent practices. The top-down programs delivered by the seed library, for example, the seed exchange and the plant exchange, were credited by participants as being their main entry points to native plant gardening. Emergent practices, in other words, initiatives planned and executed by participants other than Melanie, were discussed by many participants. The term emergent practices is often used at the macro scale in the volunteering literature to refer to spontaneous post-disaster aid, such as community search and rescue groups. At the organizational scale, this term refers to individual participants performing actions that further the goal of the seed library, independent of instruction from the founder. For instance, several participants organized an event to rescue native plants from a planned development site. One participant created a bin for people to drop off donated supplies. Another participant regularly picked up and dropped off materials in the area of Ottawa that she frequented. Participants frequently turned to the seed library community with questions, seeking collaboration, or making offers of assistance. This kind of emergence was enabled by Melanie in her administration of the Facebook page, which provided a safe space for community members to interact. Melanie said, "On the Facebook group, I'm pretty tight about it. It's so I have certain rules, like everybody being positive, and we don't accept invasive species. And I've set the tone that I always share evidence-based information with quotation marks and references, and I find people are pretty good at doing that." Although Melanie characterized her leadership style as that of a benevolent dictator, no participant complained of heavy-handedness or micromanagement in her leadership of the seed library. Many participants remarked on how receptive Melanie was to their ideas and initiatives, something which contributes to the conviviality of the organization. Participation in the seed library was task-oriented, done by small groups, and featured a high degree of communication, three aspects of informal structures highlighted by Freeman 1972 as conducive to effective collaboration. The central role of emergent practices in the seed library and the overall strategy of overcoming barriers are core organizational practices that support making restoration a convivial tool. In much the same way that a communal bike repair workshop enhances the conviviality of an already convivial tool, the seed library takes something already theoretically accessible to everyone and makes it practically accessible. Illich posited that some tools, for example bicycles, are inherently convivial, that the tool itself can be easily used, repaired, and maintained. In the case of the seed library, seeds are collaboratively collected and distributed, knowledge is shared by participants and organizers alike, and volunteers seek to enhance their own gardens and those of others using the tool of native wildflower seeds. Seeds do require specialized knowledge, for example, stratification, to grow. However, the practice of collecting and germinating wildflower seeds is inherently accessible because it does not require special tools or licenses. People who have their own garden can freely collect and distribute seed from that garden. This suggests that native wildflower seed has inherent conviviality and lends itself well to the open approach of a convivial community tool. Whether the practice of ecological restoration should have a rigid definition with standards and practices, or be open to interpretation, has long been debated. The idea of conviviality has been applied to technology, and five key elements have been identified as important to the development of convivial technologies. Those elements are relatedness, accessibility, adaptability, biointeraction, and appropriateness. Accessibility and adaptability are particularly relevant to the discussion of restoration's convivial potential. The seed library demonstrates how restoration can be made accessible, for instance, through the provision of free seeds and plants, and adaptable, for instance, by being willing to share the seed library model. Participants in the seed library reported gathering with others for purposes not expressly organized or sanctioned by Melanie. For instance, one member reported organizing a plant rescue with other participants using the Facebook group as an organizing platform. Such unsanctioned activity is desirable in a convivial community tool and evidence of the conviviality of the organization. One key division in restoration has been whether the practice is a packageable, reproducible, means to an end, or a focal practice where there is value in both the process and the product. Participants in the seed library frequently talked about the value of their volunteering in terms beyond adding plants to their gardens. They viewed the project as more than just a source of free seeds. For many, it was a supportive community. One participant said, "It's education, it's community. It's knowing that there are other people out there who are like-minded, because yes, you walk into a native plant nursery and you can't find anything. My Facebook feed is filled with all of this, so I feel very supported, and I'm like, there's a lot of us out there, but then I go to the store and there's just nothing there. So I say, okay, I'll go back to my underground group, my grassroots underground group." Several participants remarked on the importance of social support to their native plant gardening practice. In contrast, research into formal nonprofit volunteering has highlighted a gap and potential conflict between practitioners and laypeople. One advantage of a grassroots association like the Seed Library is that this dynamic is minimized. The findings of this case study point toward a novel conceptualization of ecological restoration as a convivial practice. Convivial restoration prioritizes the accessibility of the practice. Leading literature for ecological restoration conceptualizes the accessibility of the practice as engagement in restoration projects. Engagement tends to be interpreted and studied as citizen engagement, often using Arnstein's ladder of citizen engagement, which outlines a spectrum from superficial consultation to citizen control. Research into engagement and restoration uses the language of stakeholders and models the public as involved to varying degrees, but rarely owning a project. Convivial restoration exists at the top rung of Arnstein's ladder, as Illich's original conception of convivial tools outlined a need for people to be able to make the tool their own. Community-led restoration practices elsewhere have embraced practices like ritualization and art to enhance the community ecosystem connection. The conception of convivial restoration outlined here is complementary to those efforts in that the organizational structure emphasizes the ability for participants to take the practice and make it their own. Participants in the seed library, for example, are not required to have an entirely native garden, but can determine their own gardening aesthetic and practice. Participants in the seed library made signage for shared gardens, seed catalogs, and a scavenger hunt for Girl Guides, demonstrating how a convivial community tool can enable artistic practices. Prioritizing accessibility presents a challenge for convivial restoration. What if enhancing accessibility compromises other principles of restoration, like effectiveness, efficiency, or sustainability? For example, several participants in the seed library discussed the need to maintain the image of a conventional garden by incorporating some non-native plants, rather than using exclusively native plants. Such a garden would not qualify as restoration under the international standards for the practice of ecological restoration. Yet it is still a practice that is contributing to enhancing the ecological integrity of an area. Convivial restoration aligns more closely with critics of Gann et al. 2019, who have argued for a principled-based definition of restoration that is more flexible. A convivial approach to restoration would not be completely flexible so as to render it meaningless. Further research is needed to develop principles that maintain restoration and allow for the flexibility required to make a convivial community tool. This case study provides preliminary insights into two key elements of a convivial community tool: programs that lower the barriers for participants to access the tool, and emergent practices that do the same. This research presents a snapshot of a seed library at the early stage in its life cycle. It would be beneficial to study convivial community tools that have been around for a longer period of time. This may reveal whether they were able to shift the norm and what impact they had on the tool itself. Many of the participants in this study spoke about their own gardens, but some were active in community pollinator gardens as well. Such collaborative garden initiatives should be further studied as potential meeting places to build social capital for a restorative culture, taking into account similar literature on community food gardens. Large-scale research into volunteers taking initiative within organizations could provide fruitful insights into how widespread emergent practices are and what can be done to encourage them. This case study did not assess the quality of the restoration work being done by the seed library. A productive area of inquiry would be whether and to what extent convivial restoration is effective compared to large-scale organization-led restoration. Research comparing volunteer-managed areas with those managed by city staff in Chicago found biodiversity was similar in volunteer-managed areas, suggesting volunteer efforts have a high degree of effectiveness. Such a study could employ quantitative assessment of the ecological outcomes of citizen action in comparison with the outcomes of organization-led projects. The OWSL addresses three major systemic barriers to native plant gardening: cost, availability, and knowledge. The seed library emphasizes accessibility by ensuring that it puts up minimal barriers when creating and executing programs. Ivan Illich did not provide a blueprint for convivial community tool in Tools for Conviviality, but the case of the seed library shows that operationalizing the idea of a convivial community tool involves addressing barriers people face to accessing the tool. As restoration ecology develops as a scientific field and ecological restoration grows as a profession, it is vital that community-led restoration also grows its reach and efficacy. This research serves as a foundation on which to further develop an understanding of community-led efforts to enhance ecosystem integrity. Although top-down, nonprofit-led volunteering can provide valuable experiences, grassroots associations like the Ottawa Wildflower Seed Library can both bridge and dismantle barriers and push for systems change. Thank you for listening, and the link to the full publication is available in the show notes.